few words about the Gemara in Megillah Daf Yud Aleph Amin Aleph. Rav Masna Posolei Pischolai Parshas Omehocha. Rashi says Kshayirotza Lidrosh Beinyan Igeres Purim Oyamascha Lidrosh Mikra Zeh Ki Mi Goy Gadol Asher Lo Elokim Krovim Elov. Poskim Vaschanon that describes the greatness of the Goy Gadol of the Jewish nation. Tzarch Bir. Lama Pasach Rav Masna Lidrosh Binyan Igeres HaPurim Bahach Kro. What's the connection between Igeres Purim and this Pasuk of Migoy Gadol? The Rambam is HaKadoma to Binyan HaMitzvus HaKotzer. Al Seder Hilchas HaRambam he writes Vitzivu Likros HaMegillah Bo Noso Kidei Lahazkir Shvachav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Uchuos Sha'osolonu V'hayakarov l'shavaseinu k'dei l'varcho l'halo k'dei l'odia l'doros ha'boim she'emes mash hivtichanu b'torah u'mi goy gadol asher lo elokim. And the Rambam indicates that the takon of the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah is to be modia, to notify, to publicize that the divine promise in that Torah of u'mi goy gadol is true, is emes. Mi goy gadol shelo elokim kovim elov. So Rav Masna begins with that posuk. Where do you see in the Ness of Purim, in a unique way, that this divine promise is true, that mi goy gadol shelo elokim kovim elov? And why is it that we have to be modia, we have to notify all the generations that will come, future generations, that it's emes, it's true, that the divine promise in the Torah is true? Why would we have a chashash? Maybe somebody would think it's not true, that we have to demonstrate that it's true. If you look in the Brisker Rav al Torah on Parshas Vaschanon, he says that Mi Goy Gadol is a reference to Tefillah. And B'li Neder, we'll, if we get a chance, we'll look at the Brisker Rav again. The Brisker Rav quotes one of the most famous Gemaras in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Zayin, which is the source for our understanding of the Slichos, the essence of Slichos that we recite is the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. And the Gemara says, Bris Kruso Yud Gimel Midos She'enem Chozros Reikam She'nemar Hinei Anochi Koreis Bris V'gomer. Now this bris is a special bris between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael, that through the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim we're able to achieve divine compassion. And the Umas HaOlam, even though sometimes Hashem manifests his midah of compassion and rachamim for Umas HaOlam, but there's no bris, there's no krisas bris. So the Pasuk of Vaschanon, which is what the Brisker Rav wants to embellish and interpret, is Mi Goy Gadol this is the Goy Gadol, this is the unique greatness of the Jewish nation, that B'chol Koreinu Elov, whenever we cry out to him, we have, and only we exclusively have, a bris krusa, that we can cry out with the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim and Enom Chosos Reka. This is not something that the Umas HaOlam could claim. And the Gemara Rosh Hashanah on Daf Yud Ches a little bit further says that this is only when we read it B'tzibur. When we recite the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim B'tzibur, the bris was not with individuals, yichidim, but rather with the tzibur, and specifically through tefillah b'tzibur. The Gemara says, "Nis'atef HaKadosh Baruch kishliach tzibur, ve'herel of Moshe seder tefillah." So we imitate the seder tefillah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was the shliach tzibur. Omar, Kolzman Yisrael chotiv yasu lefanai kiseder, as Hashem declares, follow the Seder of the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim v'ani mocha lehem. So when the Pasuk says B'chol Koreinu Elov, it means in the plural, it's referring to the Tzibur, and this is the result of the fact that there's a bris on the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim She'enem Chozos Reikam with the Tzibur of Klal Yisrael. And that's the greatness of Klal Yisrael. Now the Brisker Rav in Parshas Ki Tisa explains, it says in Parashat Shlach, Slachno Lavona Omazed, this is in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel, it says, Kigodol Chazdecha, V'kasher Nosos Al Omazed, V'mitzrayim V'ad Heina. So what does it mean, Kasher Nosos Al Omazed? It means that when it says Ki Godol Chazdecha, morning Jerry, how are you? I had brought you a Gemara, but then I saw you had your own Gemara, so I put it back. In any event, we're going to start in about 2 minutes. We're just finishing up a little idea here about Midas HaRachamim. That Kegodol Chazdecha means that Yud Gimel Midos of Rachamim, which on which there was a bris, that's Kasher Nasasa. Kasher Nasasa means that God looks upon us favorably. That even though we're not Re'uyim L'Slicha, but nevertheless, Yislach Lanu Kasher Nasasa L'Mazeh, just like when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, we weren't worthy, but yet Hashem's compassion and the bris express and manifests itself in Hashem redeeming us. And it would seem, therefore, that with this power of the Tzibur, of Klal Yisrael, through this bris, that we could engender and bring out the manifestation of God's divine compassion. That's our bris, that's our claim to be a Goy Gadol. That's our hope and prayer. So, Bli Neder, what we want to do is try to connect this maybe tomorrow and the day after with Purim, because in Purim we also have this concept of the Tefillah of the Tzibur, of Lech Knosis Kol HaYehudim. And that's why the Rambam went out of his way to tell us that the agenda of Purim is to modia, is to notify all the doros that Hashem listens to our prayers, he hearkens to the prayers of Klal Yisrael, and we are the Goy Gadol Asher Lo Elokim Krovim Elav. Okay, we're on Daf Yud Amud Aleph, so let's see if we can go back to where we left off. And we were discussing the sugya of kitchel ashaita, kitchel asid lavo, lo kitchel asid lavo, as it appears here in Masechta Megillah. So if you're counting up from the bottom of Daf Yud Amud Aleph, you can count up 7 lines. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The first word in the line is Hani. And the end of the previous line is Eloki Hani Tanoi. The Gemara is looking for a Machlokas Tanoim on this issue of whether the Kedushas Yushalayim and the Kedushas Migdash is an eternal Kedusha. And it continues even beyond Churban, or with Churban that Kedusha terminates. Previously, the Gemara had tried to set up a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua on this issue, because Rabbi Eliezer insists that at the time that Ezra built the second bayis, he had to set up the kloyim, meaning the mechitzos, in order to presumably sanctify the Azorah and the Heichal and so forth. It would seem that Kitchel Shaita Velo Kitchel. So the Gemara rejects that and says, no, Rabbi Eliezer also agrees that the original Kedusha, the Kiddush of Shlomo Melch, would continue even beyond Churban, and there was no need for Ezra to set up the Kloim. And the only reason he did set up the Kloim is for a different reason, has to do with Kvodo Shel Heichal, and that's called Litznius of the Alma. So we still have to find some Tanoim that argue and debate this issue of whether Kitchel Shaita or Kitchel Asid Lavo or not. Perfect timing, Moshe. I have a seat for you here if you want to sit down.
Okay.
Eloki Hani Tanoi. Rather, this is the Machlokas Tanoim that we're about to embark upon, we're about to study on this very issue of Kitchel Shaita or Kitchel Asid Lavo. Now, just to mention a little background here, the machlokes, the issue about kitchel shaito, that great debate, whether it's kitchel asilov or not, is relevant to what's called bate ore choma. Okay, then, so we have at the end of Sefer Yikra, a whole parasha about the sale of a piece of property or a field in a walled city. When we talk about a walled city, we always mention Yoshua ben Nun, that it was walled back at the time of Yoshua ben Nun. And we're going to soon see that there were a whole slew of cities that were walled at the time of Yoshua ben Nun. Now, the din of a walled city is that if, let's say, Reuven sells his house in a walled city to Shimon, he has up to 12 months to force the buyer, to Shimon, to return the field. And how does he force him to do that? He redeems the field by paying the exact price that he paid, that he sold it for, way back when, at the beginning of the year. After the 12-month period passes, then what we have is Nechlat Habayis Biyadakona, Leolon, which means that never in eternity will the mocher, will the seller, Reuven, have rights to force Shimon to return the land. And that's, now, the question is as follows. What happens with regard to these cities after Churban? Now, do we assume that even if these cities are destroyed, they still retain their status? Or do we say no? That once the walls fall, then they lose their status. So there's a Mishnah in Masechta Erechin on Daf Lamed Beis that gives us a list of all the cities in Eretz Yisrael that were walled back at the time of Yeshua ben Nun. I'll just mention a few of them. There's a place called Katzra HaYishana Shel Tzipori, which was an older sort of suburb of, or on the outskirts of Tzipori. Then there was a place called Chikra, which is located in Gush Chalav. There's Yudfas, there's Gamla, there's Gedud, there's Chadid, there's Ona, there's Yushalayim. These are all cities that were walled back at the time of Yoshua ben Nun. So the Mishnah in Erechin gives you a list, but this list is incomplete. And that's the subject of our Braisa, Desanya. So we're looking now at the last of the skinny lines on Daf Yudam and Aleph. Desanya Om Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi. Lama Manu Chachamim Es Elu. Why did the Mishnah in Erechin give us this incomplete list of cities when there were so many other cities that were walled back at the time of Yoshua ben Nun? Now, Rashi points out here that if you look in the Mishnah in Erechin, it says v'kayotze bo bohen. Rashi already indicates that the Mishnah knows of the existence of many other cities, but Rabbi Shmuel is still asking, well, why were these cities singled out? Why did the Mishnah mention them? And he answers, kisha'olu b'nei agol, at the time of Ezra, when the exiles returned from Babel to Yerushalayim, matzu, on the way towards Yerushalayim, esa'orim ha'elu, they found these cities, they encountered these cities, v'kidshum, and they re-sanctified them. Aval harishonos, I'm sorry, I skipped a little bit, es'elu v'kidshum, yeah, aval harishonos, batlu, misha batla oretz. So what this means, the following. Let's emphasize the last three words in Rabbi Shmuel. He says, batlu misha batla oretz, which means that with the Churban, the status of these cities is totally uprooted. And therefore, they no longer have that special status of bate arichoma, of a walled city with all its Kedusha. We'll speak about its Kedusha in a minute. But there were a number of cities which the Bnei Agol, on their way to Yerushalayim, they encountered these cities and they re-sanctified them. Now, what is the sanctity of a city that's Mukefes Choma? How is the Kedusha greater than the rest of the cities in Eretz Yisrael that are not walled cities? So that's a Mishnah in Kalim that says the following, that when Yoshua ben Nun came into the land, he sanctified the cities that were walled with a sanctity called Machne Yisrael. Machne Yisrael is the lowest level of Kedushas Migdash. And the Nafkemina of Machne Yisrael, its status is such that Mitzorayim, and I think we covered this a little bit earlier, have to be sent outside these walled cities. Why? Because these walled cities have the status of Machne Yisrael. Also, we're not allowed to bring a dead body, once it was taken out of the city, back into the city. When Ezra came up with the Ole Bavel, they went and they were Makadesh these cities a second time around, even though, again, at the time of Churban Bayis Rishon, this status was completely lost, but they reinstituted that Kedusha but only in those cities that are mentioned in the Mishnah in Erechin, because those are the cities that they reestablished the Kedusha. Says the Gemara Alma, you see clearly that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi holds the Katsava Kedusha Rishona, Kidshal Shaita, Velo Kidshal Asid Lavo. It means that with the Golus, the Churban of Bais Rishon, when Nebuchadnezzar sent us out of the land, then all those cities that were sanctified by Yeshua, because they were Mukafas Choma when they came into the land, those cities lost their status and their Kedusha. Now earlier, which was yesterday's sugi, we covered the statement by Rabbi Yitzchak, who says that you could be makriv even in Chutz Laaretz, a karban, in a place called Beis Chanyo in Mitzrayim, bizman hazeh, our time. And now the Gemara is saying that Rabbi Yitzchak is really standing on the shoulders of this Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi, that the original Kedusha was not an eternal Kedusha, but rather Kidusha Rishon of a low Kidusha lost in love. And therefore, Rabbi Yitzchak says there's a heter bamos after the Kedusha is batel. So today, for example, we're after Churban Bayis Sheni. So Rabbi Yitzchak says any place on the face of the earth, you can build your own private altar. He was standing on the shoulders of this Tana, Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi, who said that they had to re-sanctify those cities that were Mukafas Chomim Moshe Yoshua, because with the Churban of Bayis Rishon, those cities lost their status and their Kedusha. Now what the Gemara is about to do is to show us that we're misunderstanding Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi. Because Uriminu, we have a stira, we have another Tosefta, a brisa that contradicts this brisa that we just quoted in the name of Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi. Now, Rabbi Yossi, I want to give you a little introduction. It's a funny piece of Gemara here. It's a little confusing because the Gemara quotes part of the brisa, and then the Gemara goes off on an analysis and then comes back to quote the main part of the price. So you have to be very patient here. Om Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi, why did the Mishnah mention in Erechin these specific cities? V'chi'elu bilvad hayu, these were the only cities that were walled at the time of Yeshua ben Nun, v'lo kvar nemar. Now here we're going to what we call Transjordan, on the other side of the Jordan, of the Jordan River. That's the land of Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. It's called Habashan, right? And in this area, the pasuk tells us that Kol Ela Arim Bitzuros Choma Gavoa, that the land of what's called Og Melech Habashan, that land itself, which is a tract of land that represents a fraction of Eretz Yisrael, had 60 cities, no less than 60 cities, that were walled. And the Gemara, in the name of Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi, says a Kama Chomer, if there were 60 walled cities in Bashan, then how much more so? Some people say that Bashan is what we call today the Golan Heights. I'm not sure, but in any event, so if there were 60 cities in that area, you know, Shtel's Akfar, just to begin to imagine how many cities there were that were walled. There must have been hundreds of walled cities. El Olam Amanu Es Elu. So why did the Mishnah mention these specific 8 cities or whatever the number was? And the answer is Kisha'ol Bnei Agola Matsu Elu V'Kinshu. On their way to Yerushalayim, they sanctified these specific cities. So at this point in the discussion, there's no contradiction. It seems that this brisa of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi just reiterates what we saw in the first brisa. Now, we're going to see the last part of this brisa in a few seconds, but the Gemara already now interjects in the middle of this brisa, in the middle of the quote of the brisa, to tell you that you should not misunderstand one. There's one major word here in this brisa, and you could easily misunderstand it. The last word in the brisa so far, this is the ratio of the brisa, is v'kidshum, which means that the people of Israel, together with Ezra, re-sanctified these cities, went through a whole process of sanctification. There's a whole sugya in Masechta Shavuos on Daf Tes Zayin, exactly how you sanctify a city in Israel. And the Gemara says Kidshum, and now we turn to Daf Yudam and Beis. Hashto Ha'amri, we're about to say, that's going to be the last part of the verse, which we didn't see in a minute, that if you read the next part of Rabbi Shmuel's statement, He says that as long as we have a tradition that a certain city was walled back in the time of Yoshua ben Nun, lo tzrichi l'kedusha, it doesn't have to be sanctified. Which on the contrary, as we'll see in the Sefer in a minute, that Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi maintains that kidshel shaita v'kidshel osid lovin, the sanctity of these cities continues even after the Churban. So what does it mean when he says chazru v'kidshel, what does he mean, Rabbi Shmuel, that they sanctified Ella? Matsu elu umanum. Take out the word v'kidshum and put in its place umanum. Manum means it was listed. It was enumerated.
Counted, yeah.
And why was it enumerated? In order to teach us for all generations to come that these cities have the status of Mukafas Chovim Mos Yoshua, and there was no need to re-sanctify them.
Ah.
Okay? So, for example, what would be the import of knowing that these cities were sanctified and retain their sanctity? First of all, you'd have to send the Mitzorah out. Number two, if you sold a house in that city after 12 months, it's Cholot Bidea Kona. Number three, Rashi says here, you'd have to read the Megillah on the 15th of Adar, and as a din of a crop. All these dinim have to be notified Lidoros, so we know which cities were walled. And that's what's called umanum. You know, here the words of Kiyotzubahed are very important, that the umanum means this is not an exhaustive list of the cities that were walled at the time of Yoshua ben Nun, but these are the cities that are mentioned. Now the Gemara goes back to the Sefer the Braisa. The Sefer the Braisa says, in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, lo elu bilvad, these were not the only cities that were walled at the time of Yeshua, namely these cities listed in Erechim, elakol shetalucha misoros biyadef mevosecha, as long as you have an unbroken tradition from your fathers and grandfathers and so forth, shemukefes choma mimos Yeshua ben Nun, that this particular city was walled back in the time of Yosef, called mitzvah salolu, nagimba, all these mitzvahs, like shiluch min amachna for Mitzorah, and reading the Megillah on the 15th, and then and Yud Beis Chodesh for Bayis Orichot to sell it, and so forth, so on. All these apply to those cities. Mipnei, and here's the punchline, shekidusha rishona kidshel shaita v'kidshel osid lovo. So it's very strange because in the first brisa that we quoted earlier, Rabbi Shmuel was quoted as saying that Matsu Elu Velu V'Kidshum. And he says about the other cities that were not re-sanctified is Batlu Misha Batla Aretz. When the Churban of Bayis Rishon took place,
right. The
sanctity of the city was completely batlu. It was null and void.
So how do we?
It means Kidshum Rishana Velo Kidshum. And here we're saying no. That Rabbi Shmuel goes explicitly on record as saying that Kidshum Rishana Kidshum Shaita V'Kidshum lost its love. But if you have a Masorah about one particular city that was walled at the time of Yoshua ben Nun, then that's the status of the city. It has the Kedusha and the status of a walled city. Is Kasha the Rabbi Shmuel, Ad Rabbi Shmuel? So Gemara answers, Trei Tanoi, I'll leave the Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi. There are two versions of what exactly Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi maintained. One version has it, like the first price we saw, that Kidshel Shaitim, a low Kidshel Asid Lovo. And the second price maintains that according to Rabbi Shmuel, Kidshel Shaitim, Vik Kidshel Asid Lovo. So we finally end up with the Machlokas Tanoim. Again, who are the two Tanoim? We don't know. These two Tanoim are arguing about what Rabbi Shmuel maintained. But it doesn't matter. We have two versions and two traditions in the Tanoim on this very basic issue about whether Kidshel Shaitim, a low Kidshel Asid Lovo, Kidshel Asid Lovo, Iboy Seima. Ha Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi Amora. No, it's our Girsa in the Braisa is Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi. But there was maybe Rabbi Shmuel's brother's name was Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi. I'm not sure. And we find that Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi holds a kidsha rishayna kidsha liyosid lavo. So the second Braisa, which is quoted in our version in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, and he maintains a kidsha l'shaita v'kidsha liyosid lavo, in fact, is not Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, it's Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi. But Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi holds like the first Braisa, that kidsha l'shaita v'lo kidsha liyosid lavo. And how do we know that according to Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, kidsha l'shaita v'kidsha liyosid lavo? Tesanya, we learned that a brisa, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Omar, he darshins the pasuk at the end of the Sefer Yikra. It says, "V'kam abayis asher ba'ir, asher lo choma." Now, take a look at the word "lo." If you see the word "lo," it says "lo" with an aleph. Now, "lo" with an aleph means no. Lo with a vav means he, meaning he has a choma or it has a choma. So obviously we have to dash in both what's called the kri and the ksiv. We read it as lo with a vav, but it's ksiv, it's written as lo with an aleph. And Rabbi Yossi darshins for that afal pisha ain lo achshav choma, doesn't have a choma now. That's the lo with an aleph. Hashel lo choma, doesn't have a wall. Nevertheless, v'hoya lo choma, it did have a wall. Kodim lachem, meaning at the time of Yeshua ben Nun. So since it had a choma that surrounded the city at the time of Yeshua ben Nun, it's sanctified with the special kedusha bati ari choma. Even though now it doesn't have a choma, so you see clearly that kitchel shaita. The kid should lost his love. And therefore the second verse that we just learned is not really Rabbi Yishmael, but rather it's Rabbi Elazar. So I both say, from now till the end of the perek, we're learning Agadita. This is one of the longest Agaditas in Shas. And it ends, I think, on Daf Yud Zayin. Yeah, all the way to Daf Yud Zayin. It's like 8 block Gemara. Okay, so the first Agadita that we're going to learn is focused on the word Vayehi, which is the first word of Megillus Esther. And the Gemara quotes Rabbi Levi had a tradition. What was Rabbi Levi's tradition? Vayehi b'me'ach HaShverosh. Om Rabbi Levi v'itema. Others say it was Rabbi Yonasan. Dover zem esoris b'yodeinu me'anshei Knesset HaGedola. We have an unbroken tradition that kol makom shenemar Vayehi, whenever the pasuk uses the word vayehi, eino ela loshen tsar, it indicates something that's very painful. It's around the corner. It's about to happen. And vayehi b'me'ach HaShverosh is hava haman. That immediately around the corner is HaShverosh is going to give haman a special status, and he's going to decree the annihilation of the Jewish people. The Marsha says that what's unique about the word vayehi. He says if you cut it in half, it's vai and hai. Both of these words are words throughout Tanakh, and he sends you here to Yechezkel, Perek Beis, of woe, W-O-E, of tsar. Now it's very interesting that this pasuk, vayehi b'me'ach HaShverosh, has nothing to do with Haman. In fact, the pasuk about Gidol HaMelech HaShaman is going to come much later on in the Megillah. The entire first section of the Megillah about Ahasuerus, you know, rising to power, and he has 127 provinces. This is all good news for the Jews because it was a very pluralistic society. The Jews had freedom, and not only that, they participated in the civil activities or the governmental celebrations. Why is Vayehi a Lashon Tsar at the beginning of Megillah? And it's going to be years down the line that Haman is going to institute his gzera, his decree against the Jewish people.
Galut.
So it could be possible that what Rav Yonasan is pointing out, or Rav Levi, is that the Megillah should be viewed as an entity, meaning we don't chop it up into its segments. So we'll come back to this point a little bit later. Now the Gemara goes on and quotes a pasuk in Megillas Rus. And this is also going to support the tradition of Rabbi Levi. It says, "Vayehi b'mei shvot ha-shoftim," at the very beginning of Megillus Rus, and immediately afterwards, "Dahava ra'av," they suffered. The next pasuk says, "Vayehi ra'av baretz," and as a result of this ra'av, you may remember that many of the children of Israel died, and then the whole story of Naomi and Rus and so forth and so on. So the painful part of this Megillah is initiated with the word Vayehi. Another proof. Vayehi ki hechel ha'adam l'rov. This is in the sixth chapter of Bereishis. And this Vayehi introduces a parsha in which the people will sin. And I'll read to you one pasuk of the sin. The Gemara is going to quote another pasuk. But Vayikhu lahem noshim mikol asher bacharu. This is the immorality that began and ultimately culminated in the pasuk Vayar Hashem ki Rabba Rabba Saaretz, and that was the gzera of the Mabul, that the entire world would be destroyed. So the beginning, if you want to say the roots of this historical event that's the destruction that signifies the destruction of the world is in this pasuk Vayehi ki Hechel Adam LaRov Al Pnei Adama Vayichu Lem Nashim Mikol Shebacharu. And that was the sin that began, you know, that began the avalanche, if you will, that goes down, down, down. Now we have a pasuk about the Dar HaFloga, also in Sefer Bereishis. It says, Vayehi b'nas'am mikedem. I'll read to you the whole pasuk. Vayimtzu'u bik'a be'eret shinar vayeshu sham. They gathered together and they lived in a place called a bik'a of Eret Shinar. And there they gathered together and decided to build the Tower of Babel and rebel against God. Hava nivne lanu ir. In the end of the pasuk, migdol v'rosha b'shamayim. So the Vayehi initiates this parsha, which is going to end up with the terrible sin of the Dar HaFloga. Then we fast forward to the to parshas. I think it's Vayera, if I remember correctly. Vayehi b'imei Amraphel. And here there are four malachim, four kings at the time of Amraphel that do battle against Asu Melchama. They battle against five other kings. And this was the first major, I guess, world war in history. The Marsha adds, Ad Uz, until that point in time, Lahoisa Milchama Ba'olam. He says there was no war in the world. And he quotes the Targum on the Megillah. Now what happens is, and I think we discussed this earlier in Masechta Megillah, that Yoshua is accosted by a very gaunt figure, a very scary person. He's a malach with a sword in his hand, and he comes to castigate the people of Israel because, number one, they failed to be makriv the korban tamid, they were busy at war, and they failed to use the nights for the study of Torah. Even though at night there's no Melchama, they weren't out to battle, so they could have fit in the Korban Tamid, and they could have dedicated themselves to the study of Torah. So the Pasuk says, V'charbo shlufa biyado. The Malach was threatening to take punishments, issues against the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. Then we have the pasuk in Yoshua, Vayehi Hashem es Yoshua, Vayehi Sham O b'chol ha'aretz. So it seems that everything is going well. You know, Yeshua conquers the city of Yericho. He brings down its walls, and God is with Yericho. So what's so terrible here, Vayehi? And the answer is, if you fast forward a few psukim, it says, Vayimalu b'nei Yisrael ba'al b'cherem. Immediately after this comes the milchama against the city of Ai. And there they stole from the cherem. They weren't allowed to take any of the booty. And as a result, in the next battle, they lost a whole bunch of Jews died. And then in Shmuel Aleph, it says, Vayhi ish echad min haramasayim. And he marries, what was his name? Elkanah, I think, if I remember correctly. Yes? Okay, I don't have a Tanakh here. But anyway, Vayehi ish echad min haramasayim. What's the tsar? What's the pain over here? And if you look at the next parasha, it says, Kies chano ahav Hashem soga rachma. And he's married to two women, like Pnina and Chano. Pnina has seven children. Chano doesn't have any children. And this was the anguish of Chano that brought about ultimately the birth of Shmuel. Another pasuk, it says, Vayehi kasher zaken Shmuel. I'll read the whole pasuk to you. Vayosem es bonov shoftim li Yisrael. Now this is an unfortunate event in the history of, in this case, Shmuel. That Shmuel was such a great Navi, and he judged the people of Israel. When it came time for his death, he appointed his children to be shoftim, and they would be the manhigim of Klal Yisrael, and hopefully they would follow in his legacy. So he appoints in Beersheba his children to be the shoftim in Yisrael. And they were meant to judge the people of Israel, make it a little easier for Shmuel at the end of his life. But the pasuk testifies, V'lo holchu bonav bedrochav. But they didn't follow in the footsteps of Shmuel. So this Vayehi again indicates some sort of anguish. Another pasuk, Vayehi David l'chol drochav maskil v'ashem imo. Now again, it's a little bit tricky because it seems that David is called a maskil. Maskil is someone who has a tremendous foresight and sensitivity. God is with him. Where's the tsar over here? And this is in the youth of David HaMelech, and immediately the jealousy of Shaul is incurred. And it says in the next pasuk, Vayehi Shaul Oyein es David. Shaul becomes the enemy, the arch enemy of David. That's a terrible thing. Then in Shmuel Beis it says, "Vayhiki Yashav HaMelech BeBeiso." Now David HaMelech, after he conquered, he destroyed Plishtim again in the war against Plishtim. He sits in his house. He's in his castle. Hashem. The next part of the pasuk says, "Hashem Iniach Lo Misavim Mikol Oyvav." This is great. Imagine he's secure. He has no enemies. So this throws us off because we think that what's going to happen here is that David is going to build the Beis HaMikdash, right? Everything's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The halacha is that once you conquer the enemies and things are quiet, then it's time to build the Beis HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. So David should have done that. But then Nosan HaNovi comes to him and he tells him, Rak atol lo sivna abayis, that tragically you will not be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. So that's the sad part.
The one with the David and Shaul, this one... The one
the
Shaul also has a
Vayihi,
so it's, why do you need the first Vayihi seems to be almost independent, and second...
Oh, there's a second Vayihi, you're saying?
Yeah, the
Vayihi
Shaul. You see how
the... Oh, Vayihi Shaul, Oyen as Dov.
And so that, why do you, the first Vayihi doesn't necessarily therefore mean...
Yeah.
And also...
Does he say anything in the footnotes?
The thing that's interesting is it says that the Vayihi Shaul... It says is pasuk ted, whereas vayhi David is pasuk yudalek, which actually comes after.
Oh, it's out of sequence.
Yeah, so I don't
okay.
know.
Believe Neder, write me an email. I'll try to research it. Okay, so now what do we have? Oh, now we have a slew of kashas. Until now, we've been very consistent. Vayhi indicates tzar. Frek the Gemara, I don't understand. What are we going to do with the pasuk? Aksiv vayehi bayom hashmini. This is the end of the 8 days of Miluim, after the Beis HaMikdash was dedicated. And it says in the pasuk, Kora Moshe Liaron Levon of Lezikne Yisrael. And here we get the tzivir on Chanukah HaMizbeach and Chanukah HaKohanim, to sanctify the Mizbeach and to sanctify the Kohanim. And this was on the first of Nisan, on the day that the Mishkan was established with Sanya. Oso ayom hoisa simcha lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiyom shenivru bo shamayim v'aretz. This day was so great, it was equivalent to the simcha of shamayim v'aretz. And how do we know this? It's based on a kind of gzeirah shavah. Ksiv hach, it says, Vayhi bayom hashmini. Uksiv hasam, it says, with regard to the creation of heaven and earth. Vayhi erev, vayhi voker yom echad. So we see that the word vayhi is indicating simcha, not tzar. That just like there was a tremendous simcha at the moment of creation of the world, we'll see the Marsha in a second, so too there was a great simcha at the time of the dedication of the Mishkan. So the Marsha says, what is the simcha of the creation and what is the simcha of the Mishkan? He gets very poetic. He says the following. The simcha of the dedication of the Mishkan is described in Shir HaShir in Perek Gimel, according to the Mishnah at the end of Masech the Tainis. The Pasuk says, Seno re'ena benos tzion b'melech shlomo, batarosh etrolo imo, ubiyom simchas libo. So the Pasuk in Shir HaShir describes the majesty and the glory of this great day of joy as Yom Simchas Libo. The Gemara says, what day is the Yom Simchas Libo? And the answer is Zeh Binyan Beis HaMikdash. So Shlomo HaMelech is telling the people of Israel about this Yom Simcha, which is the day in which they dedicated the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara has a Gzeres Shava here in order to prove that the Simcha, the nature of the Simcha, the essence of the Simcha, was identical with that of the creation of Shamayim Va'aretz. And here's where the Marsha gets very poetic. He writes, HaSimcha V'Ratzon V'Kiyum Lefonov. Wow. I think what he means is that this is the Simcha of God's will coming to fruition, that God's will was to create the world, and now it was implemented. V'chein Ba'Komas HaMishkan, and so too this was the divine will at the building of the Mishkan, Shebo, in the Mishkan, Nisyachet Shmo, the name of God would become unified, Nisyachet Yichud Hashem, Biratzon Ubikiyu, with the fulfillment of God's will, and that would be the eternal Kiyum of God's will.
I have a question on, again, you have, okay, so they're pointing out the Vayihi, the Yom HaShemini, but what about the Vayihi Baboker? That there's a whole bunch of Vayehis in
right, and they're all Simcha. So not one of them.
And that's all Simcha. So where's the
one? Not one of them is Tzar. That's the Gemara's Kasha. Mm. So we have a whole list of Vayehis. The Gemara is going to extend this list and include a whole bunch of other Psukim. So as far as the Hakamas HaMishkan is concerned, that day itself, the Gemara says, was a day that ultimately led to tragedy. To Hashachiv Nadav Aviv, on that very day, it says in the parash, I'll read you the pasuk, and this all happened on the same day as the Hakamas HaMishkan. It says, Vayikhu Bnei Aaron Nadav Aviv Ishmach Toso Vayitnu Bahem Eish Vayasimo Leah Ktores Vayakrivu Lufnei Hashem Eish Zara Asher Lo Tziva Osam Vateitze Eish Milufnei Hashem Vatochal Osam. Now, as far as the other Vayahi, namely the Vayahi of the creation of the Shemayim Va'aretz, so if I'm not mistaken, I think it says that the process of creation, although it's a fulfillment of God's will, but there were certain things that happened during the process of creation that were sort of undermining the will of God. I'll give you one or two examples. Like God asked the Eitz Pri Osa Pri that the Tama Eitz should be Shetama Pri, and there was rebellion there. Also, the God separates between the low waters and the high waters, and that also generated a lot of jealousy.
And the Yireach and the
correct Shnei Ma'oros, and the Yireach comes along and says, "How can you have two kings that are ruling, sovereign rulers at the same time?" And then ultimately, this led to the last day of creation, the creation of man, in which he sinned because he couldn't understand how God would legislate that he couldn't eat from the Eitz Hadas. Now we have another question. Vaksiv, Vayehi b'shmonim shon av arba mil shon al etzeis b'nei Yisrael meretz v'tzai b'chodesh zehu ha-chodesh ha-sheni l'mloch Shlomo al Yisrael v'yivin ha-bayis. So Shlomo Melch builds the Beis HaMikdash, and there was a tremendous simcha, and there was no tzar. So here again, what do we do with the word Vayehi? So it's 480 years since they left Mitzrayim, and it's the second month of the year. It's the second month in which Shlomo Melch reigns over the people. He builds the Beis HaMikdash. It was a great simcha. Another pasuk, Vaksiv Vayehi Kasher Ra'ah Yaakov Es Rachel. Again, it says Vayehi, and yet here Yaakov saw Rachel on that very day. Shall we use the term, and don't quote me on this, I'll deny I said it, that Yaakov falls in love with Rachel. Right? And this is the beginning of a great marriage.
But the first base Mikdash was destined to be destroyed, and Rachel died before they got to... So, I mean, I guess you could say all good things...
seem to go sour at some point. In fact,
you can't have happiness without a little bit of misery.
If you really want to go into philosophy, this would be a great place for.
No, you can't have. Right.
He has a long piece here, which is very fascinating, because if you remember when it says about Elkanah that he married Hannah, the Gemara says that's why that's Tzar, because she will be barren,
childless, small, and then she. And she was barren, but then she eventually...
Well, she had Shmuel, but I'm saying the Gemara...
And then she had children after that, too.
Right, but the Gemara says that the Vayehi is the fact that she was barren. So here also, that's what they asked, was Gemara bothered about Yaakov as Rachel? Because Rachel is also going to be barren. So what's the difference between the barrenness that the Gemara points out earlier of Chana and the barrenness of... So that's a long discussion.
Well, that's actually the point, yeah.
Yeah. Then the Gemara asks, "Vaksiv Vayera Vayvoka Yom Echad." This was your question from before. And then the Gemara says, "Ve'aika Vayera." Then it gets Vayera Vayvoka Yom Hasheni, the second day of Bria. And then Ve'aika, he goes on. He says, "Vayera Vayvoka Yom Hashlishi." Ve'aika Tuva. There are many, many psukim which indicate happiness and joy in the world, even though it says it opens up with the word Vayehi. So now the Gemara goes back to Rabbi Levi and reformulates the tradition of Rabbi Levi. Omar Rav Ashi, Kol Vayehi, Ika hachi. The word vayahi is neutral. It could go this way or it could go that way. But vayahi bimei, when it adds vayahi bimei, eino ela loshan sar. So there are two footnotes here that I wanted to mention to you. One is the Sfasemis. He says that what's Rav Ashi intending to say? He says, Emasai, whenever it says Vayhi Levad, Humora, it indicates something radical or something of significance. O shall Simcha Gedola, O shall Tsar Gedol. Why? Because the word Vayhi means Haflogas Ha'inyan, something out of the ordinary, something almost exaggerated. So therefore, if in the context you see it's Simcha, then we're going to say Vayhi means Simcha Gedola. And if it's in a place of Tsar, it means Tsar Gedol. But now, what's the difference between Vayahi and Vayahi Bimei? So he quotes the Marsha, Tam Hachiluk Bein Vayahi LeVayahi Bimei Mishum Shemashma Shemukomo Shenema Ben Vayahi Bimei Hamila Vayahi Miuteres. In other words, the Torah could have just began the pasuk with Bimei. Ulakach Bo Lidrosh Osa Kishtei Milim. So then we take the word Vayahi and we apply the laws of Drush to see what the word, the extra superfluous word Vayahi means, and we split it in half, Vay and Hey, which are both Lashonos of Tsar. So also, let's go back for a minute. Is it true that all the sukkah that we had before said Vayahi Bimei? I just remember the first one.
No,
1 second. It was Vayahi Bimei Achashverosh. That was the only one.
No.
We also had Vayahi Bimei Shofas Shoftim. Then it says Vayahi Ki Hechel. It doesn't say Vayahi Bimei.
That's not one of the, I guess those, the ones that are not Vayahi Bimei are the ones that are not in that. They could go out there. They happen to be bad, but they're also a good one.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it's.
In other words, he's saying that whenever you see Vayahi Bimei, then automatically it's got to be, by definition, Tsar. But Vayahi could go either way.
It's interesting how Vayahi Bayom Vayahi Bimei, it's very close, right? In the day, one is. Vayahi Bayom generally appears to be positive because that's, you know, about creation, and then I guess the eighth day it's Nadavihu, but generally it's like positive.
Now, what does it say by Nodava view? It just says Vayahi Bayom Ashmini.
Right, but I'm saying Vayahi Bayom, Vayahi Bimei, Vayahi Bayom seems to. It's very close in terminology, but it's.
Well, the Marsha is saying that you have to knock off the word Vayahi and see if it reads without the word Vayahi. So I don't know if you could start Bayom Ashmini. Maybe you could start Bayom Ashmini. Yeah, I guess you could, yeah. Bayom Ashmini,
Karo Moshe. You could argue that. I mean, really, I mean, they were saying, you know, I just was noting that the. It's because all of creation is Vayahi Bayom, but that's all positive. But it's very Bimei and Bayom are very similar. One's just a different form of the same word, but one is positive, one is good, and one's bad.
So now the Gemara enumerates five times where it says Vayahi Bimei, Chamisha Vayahi Bimei Hafu. There are five times where it says Vayahi Bimei, Vayahi Bimei Achashverosh, and that indicates the Tsar of Haman and his Gzeira. Then it says Vayahi Bimei Shvot Hashoftim. And then came the famine and all the tragedies after the famine. Then it says Vayahi Bimei Amraphel, which you said the first war, and then Vayahi Bimei Achaz. So this we didn't see yet. So let's read the pasuk. Let's see, Vayahi Bimei Achaz. This pasuk is in Yeshayahu Novi, I think. Just 1 second. That doesn't make any sense.
He says it's
Yeshayahu Novi. So it says Vayahi Bimei Achaz ben Yosef ben Uziyo Melech Yehuda, and then it says Ola Ritzin Melech Aram Ufakach ben Ramalia Melech Yisrael Yishlaim LeMilchama Leha. So the king of Aram goes to battle against Yosef, against Achaz ben Yosef Melech Yehuda. So that's a tragic event. And then it says Vayahi Bimei Yehoyakim. And the tsar that happens in the wake of Vayahi Bimei Achash is the Golos and the Churban. The Golos and the Churban actually began with the death of Yehoyakim. So these are all cases in which the Vayahi Bimei indicates tsar.
With his death? Because just the footnote is here saying that it occurred during his life.
Oh, okay.
That he was in.
Let's go on just for a minute, and then we'll finish up. It says here another tradition of Reb Levi. It seems that Reb Levi was the one who used to tell us about different words in the Tanakh and what they mean. So in addition to the Mesorah that he brought before about Vayhi Bimei, that is Loshen Tsar, he brought another Kabbalah from his rabbis. The Omer Rabbi Levi, Dover Zeb, the following Mesores V'Yodeinu Me'Avoseinu. What do we hear from our forefathers? Amotz, right? We just mentioned Amotz, did we not? No, we didn't mention Amotz. We mentioned Ochos. Yeah, Amotz, he was the father of Yishayahu HaNavi. V'Amatzio was the king of Yehuda. Achim Hoyu, they were brothers. Now, what's the significance of the fact that they were brothers? Michael Mashmalon, what he's trying to tell me?
That the Navi was the nephew.
Right. Okay, that's good. Michael Mashmalon. So, what's Reb Levi with this Masorah? What is he telling us? Why do we have to know this? That that these two gentlemen were brothers. Ki Hodi, Omer Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omer Reb Yonah's son. There's got to be some moral or ethical message over here. Kol kalash itznua beveis chamea zocha v'yotzim imenu malachim unevim. So there's a schus here for the mid of tznius, which we translated loosely as modesty. And she was modest in beis chamea, and as a result, she had talmidei chachamim that were able to be malachim and nevim, which means amatzia and Yishayahu. So let's read a little bit about this midah of tznius here. He says, "Bebeis chamia l'rabusa she'af she'tzricha legalos poneh sham bifnei bala mikomakom nizheres l'skasos bifnei achirim afilu bifnei chamia." So it means that she was tzanua vis-a-vis her father-in-law, even though she was in Beis Baila, even though she was living with her husband there. So obviously she didn't cover her face, you know, in front of her husband. So now the Gemara is going to go into a whole long discussion here about tznius and how this impacts on Klal Yisrael. So that's where I where I'm going to stop for a bit.
Is this teaching us, because there's that group that cover there with their...
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, we'll see. Different, you know...
Like a source for them.
Right, right. The different sociological factors, you know, that were true back in the day. So wait, what was the question you asked me before, Eric, that I said to you, right, meaning evil? That was about Vayhiba, Vayoma Rish, Vayera Vayvoker? Was that the question?
No, what was the question?
Oh, no, there were two Vayahis.
Vayhi Sha'ul, the king, seems to come
yeah,
right there.
There are two Vayahis.
Well, I guess, though, they correct it because then they do seem to, I mean...
Wait, give me a second, Eric, to just go back to, so my head is screwed on properly.
Vayhi David L'chol Drachav.
Just give me a second, Yeah, there it is. Vayhi David l'chol drachav maskil, and then it says Vayhi Shaul Oyein es David.
And the Vayhi Shaul actually comes after. So, you could say that it's irrelevant because they come later, and then they say, okay, the Vayhis could be either way. But it's just interesting that they're citing that when they cite this, they cite the Vayhi Shaul, which came after the Vayhi David. So why would they?
Right. And he doesn't say anything on the bottom here?
No,
I don't have anything here either. I always think to myself that if I can't find something on the spot in the sift, it must be somewhere in Oscar. But
no,
I guess that's not necessarily true.
No.
But I have in the back the Yalkut HaBiurim, so Bulineder, I'm not promising you, but if I get a chance, we'll get back. Yeah, let's go.
My children have been not as good as cooperative getting out of the house in the morning.
Oh, I never heard of such a thing in my life.
How old are your kids?
11 through 18. We're not talking about it.
Wait till they have a boss.
Yeah, I know. I'm waiting for my 18-year-old to go to the army because he's the worst. I'm like,
Maybe they'll discipline him there.
Oh boy,
that's what they say about the IDF, that whatever they don't do at home, they do in the IDF.
The IDF. Well, it's not there.